Welcome to Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation's first Podcast Pro. In this inaugural edition of our new occasional podcast series aimed at professionals, we'll be discussing the results of a number of research projects looking into specialist nurse numbers and patient ratios, training needs, the challenges of continuing professional development, and insights from patients on service requirements and individual needs.
The NHS has not got a bottomless pit of money, so we have to make sure that we've got the right number of nurses, but also working at the right level, because it doesn't necessarily mean having more nurses will make a service better.
You don't change behaviour or get a concordance with anything unless you address it in the language and in a way that is relevant to that individual.
Communication is key, and not overfilling a conversation with jargon that is very, very off-putting for many people with diabetes who simply don't want to hear that, but they want to hear about themselves and how they can make their lives easier.
I myself have taken lots of annual leave over the past 2 years to attend European conferences, other national conferences, and that is in diabetes. I do it all in my annual leave because I can't take time off work.
You know, when you're managing a chronic long-term condition such as diabetes, it's important that you've got those support networks around you, knowledgeable healthcare professionals.
I'm Claire Levy from DRWF, and to help me explore some of the key results and recommendations, I've been talking to the researchers and diabetes healthcare professionals.
My name is Debbie Hicks, and I'm a nurse consultant working in diabetes care. I work for Medicus Health Partners, which is a super group of practices in Enfield, North London. But I'm also co-chair of Trend UK, which is an organisation supporting all nurses working in diabetes care. And I'm also chair of Injection Technique Matters.
I'm John Grummett. I am chair of the IDEAL Group. My background is I've lived with type 1 diabetes for the last 30-odd years. I've been a trustee and vice president of Diabetes UK since 2003 and on the International Diabetes Federation, and I'm also chief exec of Changing Health.
Hello, I'm Anne Phillips, and I'm an assistant professor in diabetes care at Birmingham City University. Previous to that, I worked as a senior lecturer and program leader at York University and have led a curriculum over many, many years for healthcare professionals regarding all different aspects of diabetes care through children, young people going through transition, adult care and older person care. And this has been undertaken nationally across the UK, but also internationally. And I've been involved with various different committees over the past few years, and particularly in the beginning worked with Debbie and June and the previous Trends group regarding setting up the first diabetes specialist nurse degree, which we piloted and ran at York.
I'm Beth Kelly. I'm a community diabetes specialist nurse in Southampton City. So I work for Solent NHS Trust. I also am the co-chair for the DSN Forum UK, which is kind of a peer support group for anyone that specialises in diabetes, so midwives, nurses, pharmacists, kind of multidisciplinary sort of people. I'm also a board member on the Forum for Injection Technique, which is a multidisciplinary board that puts guidelines together for the importance of good injection technique for people with diabetes using injectable therapies. A part of the DSM Forum team, I won the Healthcare Professional of the Year award in 2018, the Quality and Care Award. So that was really good, and that was for setting up the forum. I also, I guest lecture at both universities in Southampton. So I have guest lectured on the master's programme about transition and young adult care in diabetes. And I've also lectured on the undergraduate nursing programme at the Solent University on diabetes topics too.
You're listening to DRWF's Podcast Pro with Claire Levy.
The Experience of Diabetes Care Survey 2019 was carried out by DRWF in partnership with DPC, Diabetes Professional Care, which was launched at DPC 2019. I asked DRWF's Chief Executive, Sarah Tutton, to explain more about this research partnership.
DRWF has been a supporter of diabetes professional care for the last 4 years. We've been the registration sponsor. And DPC is an amazing event that offers free CPD-accredited learning to diabetes and related healthcare professionals. As a patient representative organisation, we felt that DRWF was best placed to partner on a survey such as the experience of diabetes care, where we could gather opinion and insight into the patient experience from people living with all types of diabetes. And I guess, you know, our hopes were that we'd be able to share insights and observations from the survey to ensure that the lived experience of diabetes remained at the heart of the education and information that is being shared through the programme at DPC, really just wanting to keep the person with diabetes at the heart of everything that they are talking about during the course of the event. So we're obviously hoping that the survey findings will also help to inform the National Diabetes Care Improvement Agenda. And DPC sees an awful lot of engagement with some of the leading kind of decision makers in that respect.
Did the survey discover anything that you can share with us at the moment?
The survey itself was quite broad. We had a really good response, over 430 respondents, and the results showed a number of things. That for instance, that almost half of the people responding to the survey spent just 20 minutes with their healthcare professional. Around 30% saying that they spent about 20 to 30 minutes, and a much smaller number at 24% saying that they spent longer than 30 minutes with their doctor or nurse at each appointment. On average, it suggested that people with diabetes spend around 3 hours per year with a diabetes healthcare professional. And whilst there are always exceptions to the rule, I'd like to think that the amount of time that's given to people with diabetes reflects their current health needs. So for instance, for some people, 20 minutes may well be adequate to provide the right level of support and care. And for others, this most definitely won't be enough to meet their needs at point of care delivery. We know that there's still a disparity of care across the country. And of course, many people are working to try and address that through many programmes. The survey also revealed that around 50%, 55% in fact, of respondents have never been referred to a diabetes specialist dietitian for advice or education on food and nutrition. And as a charity, we're routinely asked, what can I eat now that I have diabetes, which indicates that people are looking for that sort of information that is specific to them. So all people with diabetes should be referred to a diabetes dietitian at time of diagnosis to discuss the right diet for them, with the opportunity at the right time for regular review. Because a registered dietitian plays a really important part in the wider diabetes care team.
Were there any surprises in the results so far?
I think an area of concern for us, whether it was a surprise or not, it is an area of concern for us. And that was around the number of people claiming that they'd never been asked how they were feeling. So the survey highlighted concerns over the time that the healthcare professionals spent discussing mental well-being. And around 31% of respondents claimed that they'd never been asked how they feel. And we all like to be asked how we feel. And mental and physical health are intrinsically linked. For some people, the relentless burden of managing an often complex condition such as diabetes can lead to overwhelming feelings of guilt and frustration, anxiety and distress, which leads to people feeling isolated and disempowered and disconnected. And those all of those things can in turn lead to poor management of diabetes. And ultimately, this thing that we've all heard termed diabetes burnout. And to reduce the risk of that happening, it's important that people with diabetes have the opportunity to talk to their healthcare professionals about how they're feeling and are supported in finding effective coping strategies to minimise or avoid the impact that distress and burnout can have. You know, ultimately, burnout can lead to people making poor food choices or missing appointments or not testing blood glucose levels, which is all counter to their usual sort of good self-management skills. So it's really important that healthcare professionals routinely consider psychological well-being alongside physical health. And we'd like to see considerably more people being given the opportunity and time to talk about how they feel.
So it's as important, really, as diet and lifestyle support.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in a, you know, when you're managing a relentless, often chronic long-term condition that such as diabetes, it's important that you've got those support networks around you, knowledgeable people, knowledgeable healthcare professionals, peer support networks, family and friends. It's important to be able to talk about how you feel.
Another piece of research was the Diabetes Specialist Nurse Survey carried out by Trend UK. I asked their co-chair and nurse consultant, Debbie Hicks, why they felt it was necessary.
Well, originally, at the end of 2017, myself and Jill Hill were at an all-parliamentary party group for diabetes in Parliament, talking about the role of the diabetes specialist nurse. And the chairman at the time, who was Keith Faz, challenged us with a question as to how many diabetes specialist nurses are there in the UK, at which we had to answer, we don't know, because nobody did know. So we went away with this challenge and decided that Trend UK would set up a project to actually find out. And we went to the APBI group, which is the group of pharma industries, and asked for their support. And from that, both NAP and Novo Nordisk came forward with some financial support. And we also got the operational support from NHS England.
So was it surprising that the number of DSNs was unknown?
Not really, because years ago, when I was a new diabetes specialist nurse back in the early 1990s, Diabetes UK used to have a directory, and that named all the nurses around the country and their contact details, which was fabulous. However, it didn't get finished in the fact that funding wasn't available for that to continue. So all that information was lost. Anyway, you just then had your own kind of networks to go by. But people changed positions, they moved different areas, so nobody truly knew what the number was. And in 2010, Diabetes UK did an update of their 2006 study, and it only found 800 nurses, but that was done by a kind of questionnaire, and it was up to the individuals to actually reply to that. So they only found 800 nurses.
So how important is it to record the number of DSNs and why?
Well, I think it's really important because, you know, we often get nurses around the country saying, we need more nurses, the workload is getting too much and we can't cope and there's more people with diabetes. But actually, if you don't know how many there are to begin with, you don't know whether that's too many or not enough. And, you know, the NHS has not got a bottomless pit of money. So we have to make sure that we've got the right number of nurses, but also working at the right level, because it doesn't necessarily mean having more nurses will make a service better. So we thought it was really important to get an idea of how many nurses there are, and then we can look at what is the ideal skill mix for a service, and also how many people would be expecting to see one diabetes specialist nurse, say, within a week or within a month, because then you can actually work out, do we have the right number of people providing the right number of people with diabetes?
The other piece of work we're looking at is produced by the Ideal Group and formed the basis for their paper called Invigorating Diabetes Health Professional Education to Meet Service and Individual Needs. John Grummet and Anne Phillips explained the background.
So the ideal group was formed as a group of representative stakeholders of diabetes care. It was formed in response, in a nutshell, to the fact that we've known what good care looks like pretty much since the St. Vincent Declaration. And the problem is, it doesn't get done. So we weren't trying to form another think tank. We were trying to form a catalyst that would bring together various stakeholders, create activity that would actually get done. So IDEAL exists to get best practice implemented by getting the various stakeholders to work together.
And who are the members?
So we've got representatives of people living with diabetes, from diabetes specialist nursing and practice nursing, from dietetics, from psychology, from pharmacy, and from a general practitioner, and we've got access to network to biochemists and any other healthcare professionals, for example, people working in podiatry and other forms of specialist diabetes services that we require. So we're very broad-ranging, and we're also very interdisciplinary.
Because of the nature of the people involved, we have very good relationships with all the healthcare professional relevant stakeholder groups and bodies, be they colleges, associations, charities, or otherwise. So we found that to be particularly advantageous because we can move and build collaborative effort at speed.
So the latest paper is called Invigorating Diabetes Health Professional Education to Meet Service and Individualised Needs. It was presented at Diabetes Professional Care. Can you describe what is meant by person-centred care approaches and how this can impact on effective self-management for people living with diabetes?
Individuals make decisions about how they live their lives. You don't change behaviour or get a concordance with anything unless you address it in the language and in a way that is relevant to that individual. If you don't do that, you are only shouting at them, and therefore your chances of successfully influencing people are pretty much random. So individualized care is about delivering care that is relevant to that individual and that will enable them to manage their condition as best as possible.
So access to continuous professional development for all healthcare professionals working with people with diabetes can cover a variety of learning methods. Can you expand on how this works in practice and what changes you'd like to see implemented?
One of the problems about diabetes access to education is the fact that it's become very limited over the last few years. With much more restricted study leave, with a reliance on healthcare professionals undertaking their annual leave to go to educational meetings or conferences, that can cause problems. It's also been able to leave the NHS, in particularly at times of crisis, particularly over winter time where you've got all the winter pressures. It's a very privileged healthcare professional now who can access lots of different conferences. That is a rarity now. So we've got to have other forms of education that we can outreach to people, whether that be through podcasts or journals or trying to help healthcare professionals maintain their relevance and keep up to date, particularly the generalists. Because if you're a practice nurse sitting in a rural GP practice with very little contact to other practice nurses, maybe you don't have an active network in your area of practice, trying to share and cascade ideas and keep, you know, your practice relevant and up to date is really very trying and tasking for people. So we need to outreach, and that's what I've done throughout my career, outreach to meet these healthcare and educational needs by trying to provide education in an accessible format that's interesting, engaging, but also for practice nurses and GPs and any healthcare professional in any diabetes team to move their practice forward and to undertake new learning in diabetes to help everybody living with diabetes in the best way we can.
So out of that, you talk about a competency proficiency education programme from induction that is recorded and can be evidenced for annual performance and revalidation purposes. Why is that so important for all HCPs at every level working in all areas of clinical practice who work with people with diabetes?
Because every healthcare professional, wherever they work, will be working alongside people with diabetes. So every healthcare professional has a responsibility in their own learning, but also their own career relevance and keeping up to date. And one of the difficulties we've got in diabetes care, for example, as inpatient care, is when, you know, audits are undertaken on an annual or biannual basis, and feedback from people with diabetes is about their care is maybe at times has been not the best it could potentially have been. And what I'm indicating there, and what our team of Ideal is indicating, is that it would be really good to have an efficiency core way of each healthcare professional being able to gather knowledge in a systematic way from induction, that they gain value of almost scaffolding their learning. So, you know, learning and then adding to that learning, enhancing that learning, developing that learning, pushing that learning. And that was part of the core competency framework that was designed originally, which started off in 2002. And that is, I think it's now in its fifth edition from Trend. Those core competency frameworks for diabetes nurses, that's what the original design was about, because I was part of the original design team. And I took that out to Japan, and it's been adopted in Japan. And again for the scaffolding of nurses in Japan, because, again, they had no framework. Same for pharmacists and dietitians. The dietitians one is currently being revised and should be published in the new year. So it's the recognition of having a resource for healthcare professionals to be able to gain knowledge in a systematic and safe way to enable support and working with every person with diabetes in every healthcare contact.
Diabetes specialist nurse and DRWF editorial advisory board member Beth Kelly shared her experience of CPD for diabetes and other healthcare professionals.
Oh, there's so many aspects to professional development to talk about. I think it's a massive problem in nursing careers at the moment. It's really hard to get time to go to do professional development and not only go away to conferences and things like that, but just having some time in your normal day-to-day job to catch up on anything that's new, because everyone's so busy. And that's not just in diabetes, that's, you know, in all specialities, I would imagine. I think a lot of nurses, and it is recognised by Trend and in the diabetes specialty and the NMC and the RCN, that there's a lot of people that are doing it in their annual leave. I myself have taken lots of annual leave over the past 2 years to attend European conferences, other national conferences, and that is in diabetes. I do it all in my annual leave because I can't take time off work, or I can't take time out of work to go to conferences every single time. So it is a big problem. I think when it comes to practice nursing, it's very difficult for practice nurses to get some professional development as well. I used to be a practice nurse, so I come from that experience of, you know, every trust is different, the same way that every GP surgery is different, and what some GPs see as important is not the same as what the nurse sees as important. And when you're working in a GP surgery, it's slightly different for nurses in that you're not employed sort of by the agenda for change, you're just employed by the GP. So they basically can say, you know, pay you what they like, and then you go by their terms. It's slightly different than working for sort of a bigger NHS organisation trust. So it is different again.
So training can differ widely for practice nurses.
Absolutely.
What improvements do you think need to be made, and would a blended approach to learning as proposed in the paper make a difference?
I think it's that I've come to, you know, from using Twitter and other forms of social media, and also from the DSN forum. So that's sort of a peer support group, and we've got set up on Twitter, LinkedIn, WordPress. We do regular blogs and newsletters every month, and it was kind of highlighting diabetes as a speciality to nurses that perhaps don't specialise in diabetes, and trying to encourage people into the posts. So we've got a lot of people, a lot of places struggling to recruit diabetes specialists at the moment. So we kind of set the forum up in the hope that we could use social media forms that are free and try and encourage other nurses to develop themselves and learn more about diabetes, speak to people that are specialising in it and get more help from things. So it's on Facebook, Twitter, like I said, all forms of social media. We also did a tour around the UK with that to try and bring education to people that wouldn't necessarily have time to go to educational courses. And they were kind of in the evenings and stuff. And it was encouraged for practice nurses and community nurses and things to attend so they could get the education. And it was all free as well. Mm. I definitely think there's places for, you know, I've been told myself when I went to Revalidate that, oh, you can just read a journal article and you can just do this. And a lot of them will count mandatory training. So things which we do have to be up to date with, things like, you know, basic life support and stuff. And absolutely, that's important and definitely bread and butter stuff that we do need to be educated on and be up to date with. But then within your speciality, I think there should be time set aside for that development in that as well.
Yeah.
Which I think once some nurses kind of tick the boxes for their mandatory training, nurses only really have to do 35 hours every 3 years of continuing professional development. And I would say I've done way over 100 just this year. And that's from attending, you know, week-long conferences abroad and that kind of stuff. And I've been very lucky that I've been supported to do that by some companies and stuff that have funded it, because I wouldn't be able to do it myself. But yeah, it's definitely important to have face-to-face learning, being able to meet people, update yourself on other people that have probably, you know, within diabetes, for example. So there might be someone who specialises more in mental health and diabetes more than I do. So just being able to meet them and speak to them at places like conferences, face-to-face learning, attend workshops and things is really important. But then also things like Twitter is amazing. It's free. You can access it as often as you need when you want to. You can access it on the train when you're traveling to work or whatever. But it's, you know, that's an amazing place for meeting other nurses and getting up-to-date knowledge, because as soon as someone's at a conference, you know, that information is shared within minutes and you can get stuff. I mean, that's kind of how we set the forum up, from going to conferences and things. And we were meeting, you know, we were realizing that nurses would attend these conferences and you'd see each other every kind of few months when the conference circuit hits, but then you know you don't keep in touch. And set the forum up thinking that it'd be good just to be able to keep in touch and say hello now and again, and it turned into now, you know, a forum we've got over 1400 members that are just specializing in diabetes. And it's a huge, you know, it's accessed every single day. There's posts all the time. Someone will say, you know, oh, has anyone seen, I don't know, guidelines for XYZ, can I share them? And someone, you know, from Scotland will send them down to me here for me to be able to use them as well. So it's things like that, that just opening up the communication pathways between nurses, I think is a great way. And I do think the blended approach to using different things is a really good way to go. I don't think we should take away the importance of attending conferences and courses either.
Debbie Hicks emphasised that while DSNs are committed to CPD, there can be time and cost challenges to accessing the training.
Well, again, that was one of the items that we were looking at subsequently to the results, is that to be a diabetes specialist nurse, there is an expected level of qualification. And with a band 6, we are looking for somebody to be at a diploma level. So this does mean extra education that needs to be undertaken by the individual. But the key thing is this education available in-house, and or does it have to be paid for externally? With a band 7, this is a senior diabetes specialist nurse, and we would expect this person to be either on a non-medical prescribing course or at least have the opportunity to do the course. Now, this course costs at least £1,500 to complete, but we're asking now that this qualification goes hand in hand with the post, so it's written into the actual job description. But also with a band 7, we're expecting this person to be working towards a master's degree, which again is extra education. And this won't be funded necessarily by the trust that's employing the person. So we've sent a survey out just in the last week asking a sample of our database. Do they get access to study leave? And is this study leave paid for, or do they have to pay for it themselves? And actually, we're waiting for the results to be analysed at the moment.
I asked Anne Phillips if she felt Health Education England could improve their support for access and availability to diabetes education.
It is very difficult because in 2016, the Healthcare England have a reduction of resources. So a lot of continuous professional education across the UK was cut. And that meant that lack of training places, lack of ongoing CPD for healthcare professionals meant an awful lot of diabetes education programmes closed at that point. There are pockets of diabetes education across the UK occurring for generalists, but they're not as easy accessible as they once were. And certainly we need to work with Health Education England for them to really recognise the value of diabetes education and reintroduce diabetes education being funded by Health Education England to encourage healthcare professionals to be able to attend.
And the traditional role boundaries between HCPs in diabetes care, why do you think it's important to deconstruct these to improve care for people living with diabetes?
That's because we work in teams, and every diabetes team is made up of lots of different interdisciplinary professionals. And it might be the person with diabetes sees a practice nurse first, or they may see a podiatrist along their journey, or they may see a dietitian, but the questions may be the same for each of those healthcare professionals. And so consequently, we need to enable healthcare professionals to be able to be a repository of information for individuals and questions they may ask or questions they may want to ask to enable people to ask the questions they need to and get the right information at the time they require it. It's very difficult to restrict people with access being restricted accordingly, so people with diabetes can't get the information that they require or maybe go to other resources that aren't evidence-based and maybe aren't as helpful to get information about the diabetes. So that's why working as a team, and as ideal we work as a team, so we each network with each other and share ideas, and we all grow together in our diabetes knowledge because we're sharing each of our healthcare professionals, evidence and also the speciality with each other, and that's incredibly helpful.
I asked Beth Kelly about the provision of more individual care in terms of any training challenges with interdisciplinary teams as traditional role boundaries change.
Yeah, so obviously I'm a diabetes specialist nurse. I was a practice nurse before, so I've kind of worked in two different sort of care settings, mainly based in sort of primary care, where I am now sort of secondary care. I've worked with a lot of amazing professions from all over, so pharmacists, doctors, healthcare support workers, admin teams, physios, dietitians, OTs, everyone's got their place in diabetes care. I wouldn't say the term interdisciplinary, as amazing as they are, doesn't always mean that those people are qualified in diabetes specifically. I don't always think that's a massive problem either because, I mean, as I was saying, my work on the FIT board, so that's a multidisciplinary team. So we've got pharmacists, GP with special interest, diabetes specialist nurses from inpatient, community, mental health trusts. And so we all bring something to the team, and not everyone is an expert in diabetes necessarily, but they're an expert in their professional field. And so it's really important that we all can kind of learn from each other, and maybe some are more generalists and some are more expert in diabetes, but it's about blending all those people together and then getting that education and, you know, development out to people that wouldn't necessarily access it.
Yeah.
Because we've all got different avenues of getting the work spread, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
And how we can embed that education in all those specialities. And I think I've definitely seen that with the Fit Board. Is, you know, I've never worked with some pharmacists as closely as I have with Mahendra Patel and Helen Kilminster. They both, I don't think, would say they're expert in diabetes, although they're pretty amazing at what they do. But they've opened up so much avenues in getting pharmacists more recognised in, you know, checking injection technique and things like that with patients. It doesn't have to be specifically with that kind of example. It doesn't have to be a nurse role. It doesn't have to be a diabetes specialist. I think it's always been seen as something the nurse does at an annual review, but it doesn't have to be. And it's about opening up, you know, all those other professionals that someone with diabetes would see, you know, probably more often than they would see their diabetes specialist nurse. Because how often are they in the pharmacy picking up insulins and stuff? So it's about, yeah, interdisciplinary teams opening up those avenues and getting education out to all of those people. It's definitely important.
Ideal Group's John Grummet believes individualised care can make a big difference to long-term outcomes.
If you think in terms of how you live, we all live our lives today, when we come across having to repeat ourselves or dealing with any organisation of any sort, and we have to face slightly different bases of information by which we interact with those organisations, the frustration is enormous. It's wasteful. It creates risk, and is frankly pointless. And in this day and age, in most walks of our life, we've been able to address those kind of barriers pretty dramatically, such that actually communication has improved enormously. I think we've still got a long way to go in healthcare at sharing information and that information being accessible to enable proper communication within teams and with the individual person they're trying to treat.
And that's very much addressed, I think, by the next question about individualised care with choice for people living with diabetes, why that makes a difference to long-term outcomes.
Well, it goes further than that. I've gone and had a retinal screening image taken, which is done by a digital SLR camera, and the image is about 2 meg. That information has had the potential of being shared with anybody for 15 years since digital cameras first came in, probably longer, and they haven't been. That is absolutely ludicrous. And that's just an example of information being able to be shared, which is shared in every other walk of life right now and isn't. And every year when I go and see my consultant, I ask them, have they seen my retinal screening image? And my consultant says, no, I'm not allowed to see that. And I said, would it be beneficial if you did, for your judgment as to how I'm doing and the advice you give me? And she said, absolutely. And I said, well, that's a JPEG of about a couple of meg. That is ludicrous. I'm trying to facilitate the sharing of information that is able to be shared, and in every other walk of our lives is shared, and it isn't with our care.
No.
I get an image. I don't really know what the image looks like. In fact, when it's taken, I always ask the person taking the picture, you know, how's it look? And she said, well, I'm not really supposed to tell you. And I said, cool, just let me know. And they go, well, yeah, you're okay. You got a tiny little bit of, you know, macular or whatever it is, degeneration. You know, if you live with the condition for 30 odd years or more than that, you know, don't worry about it. And I go, great. So that, I don't know. I can't look at a JPEG and I don't know what the image really means. The professionals do.
Yes.
All I'm doing is filling the gaps.
I think it comes to the next question, doesn't it, about a combination of evidence and intuition and how that helps an HCP to go beyond the delivery of diabetes care and offer advice through a blend of art and science, which you talk about, you know, with humility in the paper, that, that it's not just tick boxing. And and your point, I think, feeds into that, doesn't it, that sharing of information would help.
Well, information in itself doesn't. Sorry, Anne, go ahead.
No, no, I know what you're saying is very relevant, John, but I think it's also the ability of the healthcare professional to be able to work with the individual, listen to the language that they're saying, listen and be able to respond effectively and enable the person to say what they want to say and not feel judged for it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all got experiences of when we've been to an appointment and when we felt quite disempowered and often quite judged. And healthcare professionals, right from the moment they walk into their training in the pre-registration years of whatever speciality they're going into, communication is key, but also listening is key, and hearing those languages, hearing the words, and not overfilling a conversation with jargon that is very, very off-putting for many people with diabetes who simply don't want to hear that, but they want to hear about themselves and how they can make their lives easier.
It's the only basis on which you're going to change behaviour. And that is not, that's not just hearsay, that's proven. That is scientifically proven. It's yeah. also common sense.
Yeah.
The impact, so that's why you look at things like the movement on the internet, the hashtag language matters. And almost every day there are examples that go out there where people are going, this is how I've been talked to or talked at, and the negative impact of that. And it is just preposterous that anyone's even beginning to question the importance of this. And it has profound impact, not only on whether people will follow or you're enabling people to change their behavior or to adopt or concord with what actually a healthcare professional in their textbook says is the right thing to do, so therefore that is a way of being effective. The negative side of it is that judgment and such like can have really profound impact on beliefs and behaviour, way beyond actually the conversation itself. I'll just give you a very, very quick example. I was told on the day I was diagnosed that I had just lost between 10 and 15 years of my life, right? Yeah. I took that and I lived my life for the first probably 15 years of living with diabetes. I had very, very, very strict control and my numbers were great. The problem with that is I probably created the hypo unawareness that I then developed.
Right.
Okay. Now, and that was because I had a combative relationship with my diabetes. Now, whether it was caused by that comment made, I believe it was. I can't prove it, but I believe it was, because I said to myself, there's no way that's going to happen to me. And I made a decision there and then. Now, that comment that they made was completely inappropriate. And I'm just one person giving one example of one inappropriate comment. There'll be millions of others.
I think we have to work with individuals because no one asks for diabetes. No one invited diabetes into their lives. It arrives as an unwanted guest. So consequently, it's very difficult and we need to allow people to adjust, but also adjust all the way through their diabetes journey. And that's why the attitude and the humility of healthcare professionals we deal with is so important and the language we use.
Debbie Hicks felt that a blended range of training would equip DSNs better for a more patient-centred approach.
I think training does, definitely. But that training actually starts at the beginning of the post, because any healthcare professional that is working with people with diabetes should be putting that person at the centre of that care package. And so that will start with the person observing existing staff or senior staff that will, you know, come with the in-house training. But certainly there is things like motivational interviewing available as in-house training. So, you know, you don't need to go to a special course to learn that approach, and it should be instilled in all new DSNs that this is how the profession works.
Beth Kelly thought that the level of education needs to be more consistent if standards are to rise in the care of people living with diabetes, as recommended in the IDEAL paper.
Yeah, I think I was at the Diabetes Professional Care Conference when Trend UK announced their kind of results of the audits they've done of diabetes specialist nursing, and just showing how varied diabetes specialist nurse knowledge is, let alone that of practice nurses and primary care staff. So I think it just goes to show that the level of education definitely needs to be standardised amongst practice nurses and district nurses, community nursing teams, you know, and DSNs. I think I remember Trend saying at the conference that the NMC don't even recognise sort of specialist nurses in roles. So they recognise an advanced nurse practitioner, but they don't recognise a specialist nurse in a kind of speciality as such. So that's a stumbling block to getting education standardised. But there's definitely room for it to start in sort of pre-reg education, so before nurses and things are qualified, getting specialists out to teach those more, which I've kind of been doing when I've been going out to teach the undergrad nursing. And I think, you know, getting those involved, starting, you know, when they're training and reaching all these people and trying to standardise all of the knowledge that people are coming out with is going to be a big stepping stone to, you know, reducing the variation in care that people with diabetes are getting.
Yeah. So how important have you found the recognition of cultural, religious and community differences to offering good diabetes support?
It's hugely important. I think there's so much, especially in Southampton, we're very sort of multicultural city. We've got loads of different languages spoken here, lots of different cultures, and trying to get your head around as a nurse not only diabetes as a factor in what you're doing, but also all the different cultures that you're dealing with as well. It's a whole nother level of things to learn. So things like Ramadan, for example, it needs to be really well, you know, thought out for someone with diabetes, and having to come in and see someone that doesn't necessarily practice Ramadan, having to learn all of that and get used to possibly like, insulin changes and all that kind of thing with someone going through Ramadan. It's a big thing to learn. There's also, you know, language differences. Not only that, but, you know, some people can't access things. They can't read or write English. So that's a problem as well. Also got, you know, homeless communities that don't even access healthcare. There's huge groups of people that can't access healthcare and GP surgeries. And it's not necessarily that you know, these people are hard to reach. It's that the institutions that they're trying to access are hard to access. And so we need to work out how we can get these people in these communities seen by healthcare professionals. And, you know, a lot of it is cultural differences. We need to embrace those more in our care.
Anne Phillips highlighted that minorities account for 14% of the UK population, emphasising the need to raise cultural competencies.
Well, certainly some research we're currently doing in primary care regarding this is we're testing offering cultural competence awareness and training for primary care staff, with a view to asking people with type 2 diabetes what a difference over 12 months that has actually made to their care, or made to their perception of their diabetes and their understanding of the diabetes consultations they undertake. Because one of the problems is we need to understand diversity, but also understand people's choices and think about the language we use, the implications of that, the timing of clinics, but also thinking of how we can understand people's health beliefs and work with those health beliefs, because each one of us has different cultural health beliefs. But if you are coming into the country and you're landing in an area you don't know, and you're coming suddenly as a transient population requiring diabetes care, it's knowing the diabetes care you're going to receive is going to be appropriate for you and delivered in a best way for, you know, your cultural and health beliefs and diabetes. Unfortunately, some healthcare professionals have had good education and are really good at this. Others are finding this more of a challenge, or maybe overlooking this as an aspect of care. So consequently, we've been uncovering and looking at the different curriculums healthcare professionals undergo, and there's very little in any of them about cultural awareness or cultural competency. There is, you know, aspects on diversity. It's not completely not there, but it's so subtle that it's rather understated. So consequently, that's why we're trying to highlight, particularly for people with diabetes, that it's important that we are much more culturally enabled and culturally aware and culturally safe.
Debbie Hicks feels that it's important to stimulate the recruitment of more healthcare professionals specialising in diabetes.
Well, one of the problems with diabetes care, it is very complex, and there's a lot of different factors to think about when you're supporting somebody with diabetes. And the majority of nurses working in diabetes care are very much working kind of Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, which is great for a lot of people. But for somebody who is coming from a ward within a hospital or in the community, they will often work different shift times and also work the weekends, which brings them extra pay. So moving from a community or a hospital position to a DSN post can often mean that they're actually losing out on money because they're not working weekends and they're not working late shifts. So that's one of the challenges that we face at the moment. And you may have somebody who is a senior practitioner on a ward that, because of the speciality, will actually go down to a lower banding if they took a specialist post. So, you know, there's a couple of operational challenges before that person even gets into the post. And I think that that's what's stopping some nurses coming into diabetes specialism. Mm. I think for me, one of the key issues is not only how many diabetes specialist nurses there are, but what title do they use? Because for me, one of the most confusing things I believe that people with diabetes face is understanding all the titles. And this was one of the things that came out of the survey very clearly, was that we still have 117 different titles for a diabetes specialist nurse. Now, who knows what those titles mean? Do they all mean the same? Do they all mean different? And we think Trend UK are quite passionate about making sure that people with diabetes understand the healthcare professionals who are supporting them. So what came out of the actual audit that we did was we're actually going for some calls for action. And we presented these at the presentation at DPC. And one of the things that we are actually, you know, really passionate about is that we have two titles. We have a diabetes specialist nurse that would be working at a band 6 level, and we would have a senior diabetes specialist nurse that's working at a band 7 level. This is very clear. They are a specialist in diabetes care. We don't need all these other fancy titles that confuse people. And that's one of the main things that we're going to push for out of the results of the audit.
DRWF CEO Sarah Tutton said there's a clear need to improve DSN patient ratios across the country.
The trend survey was carried out to clarify the number of specialist diabetes nurses working across England. There are, as the survey pointed out, there are a high number of job titles associated with the role, And to minimise confusion and increase confidence, Trend called for clarity and proposed that two job titles be adopted across NHS England. So, you know, DSNs play a central role in the care of people with diabetes, supporting often complex health issues, as well as providing advice and education to other non-specialist HCPs, supporting people living with diabetes. So it's important for people with diabetes to have confidence in their healthcare provider and clarity around the titles associated with the specialist nursing role, so that people with diabetes can understand what level of care they can expect to receive. As the number of people with diabetes increases, it becomes ever more important that we have a highly trained and knowledgeable pot of nurses available. You know, they are the people. There are more people with diabetes being seen in the primary care setting. There aren't always diabetes specialist nurses available to support them. And Trend have also recently reported that there are high numbers of DSNs who are likely to retire in the next few years, meaning that there's an ever widening gap between the volume of people with diabetes, which is ever increasing, and the number of specialist healthcare providers available to support them. So ultimately, for people with diabetes, if we can't improve the current current environment within which these specialist diabetes healthcare practitioners work, it means that that people living with diabetes are less likely to see someone with specialist diabetes knowledge, ultimately meaning that they might not be getting the support that they need to self-manage their condition effectively.
And just looking at the IDEAL paper that was also presented, it talks about the need for continuing professional development for all HCPs in diabetes care, and that breakdown of barriers within HCP teams to offer a more holistic care. So based on the survey, how important is this to improve good self-management skills for people living with diabetes?
I think it's absolutely fundamental that people with diabetes are being supported by knowledgeable healthcare professionals. So, you know, as I've just said, growing numbers of people with diabetes, a disparate kind of opportunity for healthcare professionals, particularly non-specialist healthcare professionals who are supporting people with diabetes, to have access to good quality ongoing education. They can't do their job to the best advantage for people with diabetes if they don't have access to the right support and education through their career progression.
A point Debbie Hicks reinforced.
I think that we have to be mindful of, you know, it's not just diabetes specialist nurses that provide care for people with diabetes. There is a whole range of staff, and, you know, the diabetes specialist nurse is one of that multidisciplinary team. But whilst the numbers of diabetes prevalence goes up, the number of nurses are not rising in line with that. And, you know, it is now a problem that will we have enough well-trained and motivated staff to care for the increasing numbers of people with diabetes. So if we can raise awareness about, you know, the reward that you get from working with people with diabetes, and, you know, the enjoyment about, you know, supporting people and teaching other healthcare professionals about diabetes, I think we need to get that out more and share it amongst, you know, all nurses and podiatrists and pharmacists, because, you know, I've worked in diabetes care now for 30 years and I absolutely love it and wouldn't change it for the world. But I think, you know, we need to encourage other people to put their toe in the water.
And that brings us to the end of this inaugural DRWF Podcast Pro. We welcome your feedback and any ideas you may have for future editions. Please email us via the contact form on our website, drwf.org.uk. We produce a consumer podcast called Living with Diabetes, which you may also find of interest, which is available via our website in the News and Events section. This is Claire Levy. Thanks for listening.
This has been a Blue Aurora Media production for DRWF.